The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
That was a great thing about some of the teams that Tony managed. You know, they would just beat you to the point where they didn't care whether you were 20 games over 500 or 20 games under 500. It didn't make a difference. They would just they made coming to Busch Stadium a very daunting task, and they've got to get back to that mindset.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined, and I'm thrilled to start spring training podcasts off here with the Mike Claiborne, one of the voices of the Cardinals on the Cardinals Radio Network. And we also figured out that, like, now you're the you've been here longer than anyone, right? What was your first spring training?
The spring of 81.
1981.
Yeah, that was my first one.
Right after Reagan, in comes Claiborne.
Yeah, exactly. And it was over in St. Petersburg, which is a completely different setup than what we have here.
Yeah.
You had Al Lang Stadium. You had the hotel across the street. And then about a 15, 20-minute drive was the other Cardinal complex where everybody did their work, the workouts. And they didn't have a big weight room at that point. But that's where it all started.
Did they have a parade of golf carts, or were golf carts not a thing that you had to drive?
You had to drive out there. This was like 15-minute drive.
And then the media workroom was in the shower, right?
Basically, yeah. I mean, you have to remember back then, there wasn't a lot of media. I mean, you had the two.
So the Hummel workroom was in a shower.
Yes, exactly. You had the Post and the Globe. TV stations didn't come down very often. Radio stations would come down from time to time. But it was a whole different setup compared to now, where we have, 8-10 people every day here.
Yeah.
Not back then.
Were they sharing Al Lang at that time? I should know that, but were they?
No, they weren't, because the Yankees had moved on from that point. And so it was just their field. And it was a nice ballpark. And, you know, I always think about, and you've seen it in the spring training, back then pitchers, after they would pitch, would run in the outfield while the game was going on. You don't see that anymore. But it was a nice setup. And the town rolled up the sidewalks, man, after sundown. There was nothing to do there. So we had to go up the road a little bit. There was a little place up the road, but it was a different setup completely.
My grandfather took me to Al Lang Field and told me about the Cardinals being there. He's a Cardinal fan, and I love that ballpark. I don't know if I think that's a cool, classic, really classic kind of Florida ballpark, like that place in Daytona, and then Vero in a way different way, but those classic kind of Florida ballparks. Yeah. Or City of Palms was like that. Mm-hmm. They're in Fort Myers. Is it okay to say I kind of missed those places? Baltimore has one, but they kind of have the last of them.
Yeah, I do too. And because, you know what, they were so much more accessible fan-wise. Like this complex here, it's reasonably accessible. But it was something about the environment in those older ballparks that I really came to appreciate, especially after we've seen so many new ones come online. And very few of them really try to duplicate what was there in the past.
Yeah, I always like the notion, too, of like walking in footsteps of the people who came before, like, you know, that old walk from Wrigley, where you would be like, oh, man, Clemente walked this way, or Babe Ruth walked this way, you know, or think of the sports writer greats or the radio greats who walked that way. You could think that way at old Yankee Stadium. You could think that way now at Fenway. I can't really do it at Wrigley anymore because they redid.
Wouldn't know, you know, if you came to Wrigley now, and got in the Wayback Machine, it's like two different setups.
Yeah, two different.
You know, and then you go to the Cubs clubhouse. I mean, it's, you know,
it's the deck of the Enterprise.
Exactly. So it's
like we're walking at Captain Kirk. Yeah. You know, it's what's on the reader, Spock.
Exactly. And you know, you think about the Cardinal clubhouse, and they've tried to reconfigure it a couple of times, the visiting clubhouse, and it's still cramped. I mean, I don't know what they do with that place, because they said they were going to remodel it and do some things. I don't see very many improvements. You know, compared to what it was in the past, but you know, they didn't call and ask me my opinion on how to redesign it, so I'll just leave it alone.
Yeah, I mean, I think could we get to a point where that walking in the footsteps is true for the Cardinals? Because this place needs desperately to be updated. This Roger Dean Stadium complex, it is outdated, they've outgrown it, everything. It was not supposed to exist this spring, but if they build it new, and then you're not really walking in the footsteps. But maybe some of these areas will still be where Albert Pujols in 2001 walked, where Mark McGwire walked, right?
I would hope. You know, but they just don't have enough space.
Yeah.
I mean, they're talking about moving, tearing this building down and doing some things, but you know, it's all said and done. They just don't have the space like they have down in West Palm Beach with Washington Nationals and Houston Astros, and some of the other facilities are much bigger. So it'll be interesting to see what this thing looks like in a couple, 3 years.
How important do you think that is? Like, I mean, how important do you think is the actual infrastructure and modernness of the facility?
I think it has an impact.
Because you're not recruiting you are in college.
Yeah, exactly.
It's money, you know, not like...
You have players, this is all they know.
Right.
So unless they come from somewhere else and you realize that they're only here for 6 weeks, if that much, I don't know if it has as much impact. I think it's something we as media people, broadcasters, appreciate a little bit more. But I think overall players come and go all the time, and we're the only ones to stick around.
Do you think it could show up in development, though? I mean, like, we see them kind of busting at the seams a little bit.
I think the way the game is taught with all the nuances and the technology impact, it probably would serve a better purpose if you had more space and could upgrade your setup from that standpoint. Because to me, it seems like the game is going more indoors as far as development is concerned, with the video and just the meeting rooms and all the strategy that goes into play. There was a time when you were around, they just draw it up in the dirt.
Yeah.
Now it's like, no, they got to have it on an iPad and they got
movable magnets.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so, and we have the pitching lab out in the middle of nowhere here at this complex.
The portable pitching lab.
Exactly. So it just seems to me like the game has gone more indoors when it should be dealt with outdoors. Because one of the issues I have.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
With the game today, because we're looking down at our laptops and we're looking down at our iPads, and I don't know if we're watching the game as much. You know, with regard to actually, if you watch it, you can make adjustments compared to looking at this thing. And that's an element that concerns me about the direction. And I appreciate technology, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I think there's a point where we need to get away from it or use it as more of a tool compared to the say-all.
I find it fascinating, and I ask a lot about this, because you always hear from pitchers about how they never feel like they're at their best for many starts, right? Yeah. They might have a start where they feel they're at their best, but they always feel slightly different about a pitch. They always feel slightly different about how they slept. There's always some element of struggling through. And yet all the hitters prepare for them at their best. And, you know, they watch all this data and they watch all these pitches and how he does against similar hitters. And, you know, it's just like you just are constantly looking at this guy as to how he was, not at how he is.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. And so I ask, like, coaches about, like, or players, like, what role do you have to play? And like, oh, man, this guy doesn't have his changeup today.
Exactly.
We just spent all week prepping for, you watched 1,000 times his changeup to a same guy who looks like you, or the changeup that he threw you 20 times last year or whatever. He didn't have it today. Well, you know, what role does that play?
Yeah, I think it has a huge role. And I'm one of those believers in going back to watching the game. And we were talking about this earlier. The reason why I love watching Brendan Donovan hit, if I'm in the on-deck circle or if I'm in the hole, I'm going to see what this guy has today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Donovan can foul off a pitch. He can put it in play. But he gives you quality at bats for everybody else to witness compared to what the scouting report says.
Yeah.
And I think you're spot on. I don't think pitchers, you know, in a 33-start season, if the guy feels right, three times, five times coming out of the pen,
right,
they have to improvise compared to what the scouting report says. And you're right. I think that's something that we don't talk enough about, if a guy has his good stuff, because very seldom does he have his good stuff every outing.
Right. Yeah. I wonder if there's an – I don't know how they have the kind of conversation or maybe how to frame the question, so I'm going to try to do it here in real time, is this notion of, like, maybe you have to, like, use the data – but trust your instincts,
yes,
as opposed to trust the data and, like, overwhelm or have it drown out your instincts. Like, there's some kind of balance there where, like, the best hitters read and react to the pitcher that day based on the data they've given, their experience that they've given. But they trust their instincts. They don't like feel like, oh, well, I got all this data, I better use it. You know, they don't feel beholden to it.
Well, I think you have one generation that feels like they're beholden to it forever. Mm-hmm. And then you have the other generation that says, well, I know what he can't do, so I'm going to narrow it down and look for certain pitches. I'm of the belief, again, I go back to watching the game, because, again, the guy may not have his good stuff, or maybe he flips something up there just to set you up. And that's why, you know, we get caught up in the data so much. It only tells you percentages, mm-hmm. okay? He does this 40% of the time. Okay, well, what about the other 60 I got to worry about?
Yeah.
You know, and I think those are the things that we have to be able to, again, pay attention to the game, watch it, and see what happens on that particular day.
There was a method to my management here of asking you, because traditionally, yeah, you know it. I could quiz you on, like, do you think there was a reason why I asked you? Because normally we traditionally do this around Flag Day,
yes.
Mike Claiborne Day, right?
Yes.
But it got me thinking this year that Flag Day might be too late to know where this team is going, right? Like, this might be the year that Mike Claiborne Day doesn't apply.
About Memorial Day this year.
I mean, it's really it does feel that way, doesn't it?
Because you know what? Because of the way the schedule is set up, you the month of April could really decide a lot of things.
Not just the season, but future.
Exactly. And so, and we look at April, and maybe we go to Memorial Day, because by then you really know what you have compared to June 14th. And you still know what you don't have, and you still are in a position to go get it.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, sometimes you get to the trade deadline, it's too late. Mm-hmm. You know, the trade deadline today is designed to load up for mm-hmm. postseason.
Right.
It is not designed to help your team compete. So I think you have to be a little bit more aggressive. The question is, this is such a traditional sport, especially the way management conducts things as far as giving people time to develop. Sometimes you got to pull the pin a little sooner. And it's not a panic move. It's just one to say, all right, this, even if he plays his best, that still might not be good enough for us to be able to get to that next echelon. And that's the concern that you have. But, you know, I think in today's society, when people make moves, oh, it's a panic move. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, you know, they're not happy. Well, no, it's not a panic move. It's just an adjustment that you have to make because you want to remain relevant.
To me, let's say there are four outcomes, all right, around Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
They're good to great, leading the division in contention. They've taken on some heavy hitters like the schedule rely on and done well against them. They've measured themselves well against the National League. So good to great. Then there's the mediocre. Then they're... it's not going good, they're losing, then there's a disaster. Yes. Are three of those four outcomes at the Memorial Day, are we seeing changes?
Yeah, I think...
I mean, even if they're mediocre?
Yeah, I think three of the four are in play. Maybe two of the four are in play, because I think disaster and great probably don't play here.
Oh, okay.
I think mediocre...
I meant for changes, but oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think... obviously, this is a division they could win.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
They should win.
They should.
Not could. They should win.
I mean, they're expected to win a division. Yeah. But after beyond the division, when you look at the other teams and you say, well, wait a minute, how are they going to stack up with Atlanta or the Dodgers or some of the other teams that are moving up the ladder? But they played those teams reasonably well last year.
Mm-hmm.
So their biggest problem is they played to the level of competition. And that's what did them in. So they have to be able to take it to the next level of saying, we're going to mash these guys.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that was a great thing about some of the teams that Tony managed. You know, they would just beat you to the point where Uncle,
mm-hmm.
they didn't care whether you were 20 games over 500 or 20 games under 500. It didn't make a difference. They would just they made coming to Busch Stadium a very daunting task. And they've got to get back to that mindset of just saying, we don't care who you are, we're just going to come in here and just beat the crap out of them.
Does this roster have the ability to do that? Does this team have the ability to do that? And better yet, does this group have that personality to do that?
That's the question. I think there's no coincidence that we went out and got a bunch of rusty nails in Lance Lynn and Sonny Gray especially. I'm still trying to figure out where that is in the batting order. Who is that guy? You know, who is like, I don't give a darn about the other team. I'm going to come in here and I'm going to get my – I don't know who that guy is.
Could it be Nolan Arenado?
It could be, but I think Nolan is a guy that would prefer not to have that spotlight on him because I think he presses – you know, there were times last year he was squeezing the sawdust out of the bat.
Yeah.
I think he's a guy that fits in nicely with other players. I don't know if he's a guy that's going to lead you. I think he's a guy that is a very healthy complement. You have him, you have Goldschmidt. Two guys that are bookends to a point. But I think there needs to be somebody parenthetically around them also to be able to support what they do because I don't know if they have that sort of makeup. And it's nothing against their very dynamic players. I love them. I think when you look at those two, they'll go down in history as some of the greatest Cardinals we've ever seen. But you still need help. And I go back to the 2004 team, which I thought the two best teams I've seen that I wasn't covering, that I was covering, was the 2004 and the 85 team. The 85 team was dynamic. The 85 and the 2004 teams, they didn't have one guy that led them. You know, when you look at that 2004 team, you had Albert, you had Roland, you had Edmonds. They were all good guys. They complemented each other. The 85 team was the same. You had Ozzie and Pendleton, Jack Clark, Willie McGee. They all came together as one. They didn't have one guy to just, come on, boys, get on my back. I'm going to carry you. I don't think this team has it either, but they have the components to be that sort of team where offensively, they get it going, they can swing the bat with anybody.
Yeah.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
That doesn't mean they're going to have a guy leading the league in batting. But they can swing the bat.
No, this lineup could be deep and different.
Yes.
And it has for the first time in a long time since you and I have watched that real left-handed presence that is fascinating. You know, in Gorman, power, Nuke Bar, potential OPS, and Brendan Donovan, OBP. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's a presence from the left side that works in the postseason, that works through the season, and that the Cardinals haven't really had. You mentioned that Arenado and Goldschmidt are all-time greats for the Cardinals. My colleague, Ben Fredrickson, at the Post-Dispatch, he brought up an interesting point. I thought that this year might decide that, you know, yeah. Paul Goldschmidt is going into his final year. If it all goes well and he gets that extension, then there's like a red jacket in his future. But if he just finishes this year and then moves on, is there a red jack? You know, like, that's a very interesting year in the sense that they could define where they belong in the history of the Cardinals. And it was something that, you know, Mozeliak brought up to the clubhouse in their first meeting. You know, he went through the history of who played here and how Wainwright, Molina, and Pujols weren't in the room, and the current greats are Arenado and Goldschmidt, and they are in the room, and who's going to join them. But you know, he didn't say this, and when I asked him about it, he said that wasn't his point. But I think you could ask that question of Goldschmidt and Arenado, too. It's like, wait, are you going to join those guys?
Yeah, that's a good point you make. They are probably at that turn in the road where I'm of the belief that they're going to be as good, if not better.
Yeah.
But obviously this season has a lot to do with it because while Arenado's under contract after this year, you don't want a guy who is just like, oh, woe is me. Mm-hmm. With Goldschmidt, I think you bring him back regardless. I didn't see a dramatic fall off with him. I think he likes this situation. I think obviously he'd like to be on a winning team. But we all do. So how do you fix that is the big question. And I think they've tried to mix youth with experience. But this is one time this lineup is going to probably be a seven guys every day you're going to see.
Yeah.
In the past, you were basically pulling names out of a hat. You know, and maybe because of injury or lack of skill, we dealt with that last year. But I think once they have the continuity they're looking for, I think you're going to see better play from both of those guys.
Do you think Brendan Donovan becomes that rusty nail in the lineup the year?
Yeah, I do. His demeanor, you know, coming from a military background, military family, he understands discipline. And he's a guy that I think picks his spots to say what needs to be said and lead by example, I think he would be that guy. And I think he's willing to accept that.
If we work off of the Memorial Day premise, the temporary home of Mike Claiborne Day, mm-hmm. how important is spring training? And, like, look, they won the Grapefruit League last year, but I don't think anybody was walking around going, like...
They didn't have a parade or anything going down Central Avenue.
No, you didn't know what team they were going to be exactly. because it was all scattered to the World Baseball Classic. But, you know, it was pretty quickly into the season where it's like, man, this is not familiar. This is not what they want. So it wasn't like it was like a ragged spring at all. It was a fine spring last year. But they just were rarely together as a full team. This year they have their full team, but they cannot afford.
No, they can't. And, you know, there's no excuses. I mean, you had COVID, you had the lockout, you had the WBC. There's no excuses this year.
Right.
Everybody's reasonably healthy with the exception of Tommy Edman and Packy Naughton. Everybody appears to be in shape. You know, the biggest change I've seen in spring training is, and you've seen the rubber suits guys that be doing extra run. These guys are already ready to go.
Yeah.
Now, the challenge that you have is, and this is where I think we had fool's gold last year, especially with a Jordan Walker, when they keep flipping your fastballs in spring training, you know, and then all of a sudden they turn it up that last week, and now you're starting to see a little breaking balls, some change-ups, and other things you're going to see during the season. Mm-hmm. They didn't adjust.
Yeah.
They didn't adjust. And I thought that was a real telltale about not having veteran leadership to be able to let guys know, hey, this is how this is going to work. And I thought that was a real telling point where guys fell off the table quickly. And then the pitchers, once they started throwing things other than fastballs, they couldn't throw it for strikes. And they got themselves in a big hole. And when you pitch it behind in the count, I don't care who you're facing, whether it's the leadoff man or the ninth hitter, you pitch from behind a lot, guess what? You're going to get hurt.
You know what's interesting about this team is they bring back Matt Carpenter and they bring back Lance Lynn, and they're both new again to the team, but they also are a few of the homegrown all-stars. What's happened? Where are the homegrown all-stars from this team? They came back as free agents, yeah. But is that on the horizon? Or, you know, you talk about Jordan Walker, right? Like,
yeah.
Is that got to be a part of this somewhere?
Yeah. You know what? That's a good point you make, because there's a little bit of a gap between the greats and the good players that were here. And one of the things that I'm happy to see is incorporating people who were here, like a Daniel Descalzo, who played here and understood how the Cardinals did things and then went to play elsewhere.
Yeah.
So now he's got a little bit more knowledge working for him. Those are the sort of guys that you need. But there's a gap, and we're putting a lot on Walker and Wynn because they're here now. But there better be some other guys on one of these backfields that's ready to make that next step, because if you notice, when the Cardinals are good, it's a combination of guys they develop that all come up together or within a year of each other, and all of a sudden they have that good run of 3-4 years.
Right.
We're almost at that point now. Okay, we have Walker, we have Wynn, we have Gorman. Those guys we drafted.
Donovan.
So now we're looking for maybe one, perhaps two more pieces. Herrera could be in that discussion as well.
Could be Nootbaar.
You know, homegrown guys.
Like somebody of that group. It has been like a characteristic of successful Cardinal teams. Like, it was Matt Carpenter there for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously the ones that stand out, Molina, but they were homegrown. They emerged, they contributed, and they won in the playoffs.
Yeah, and they came back. The other thing that I think is important, and we're lacking that. And when you think about going back to Ozzy, having him here in spring training, I'm of the belief that the Cardinals should really consider thinking about other people who have been part of this organization, to have them just be here in spring training, to just be available. You don't have to go up and teach a guy how to play shortstop. You have to go up and tell a guy how to be a good switch hitter, but just being around so they could just talk. I think mentorship for baseball is at a real crossroads with regard to how we develop players. The reason why I say that is, when you look at the people who are coaching, a lot of these guys, not necessarily in St. Louis, but a lot of these guys never played in big leagues. A lot of these guys never played legitimate professional ball, i.e. minor leagues. We're getting guys from a lot of different places, and some of them have great value. But there's nothing like guys who have been there, done that. I've always felt, if I ever owned a team, probably won't in the next few years, but I would
there might be a few for sale.
Yeah, that's true. I hear they can get the Washington Nationals for nothing. But the point is, I would have my former major leaguers in A ball, teaching guys the game, and compared to having them in AAA, because by the time they get to AAA, some of these guys you can't even talk to.
You'd have upside down salaries.
Yeah, but you know what I would do?
Your A ball coach would be making good bank for that level.
You know what? And I wouldn't have a problem with that, because I'd rather spend more money on A ball development than paying a guy on my bench who can't even play anymore $5-8 million.
That's interesting,
because the benefit down the road would be real, even if it's like, well, you're going to talk to 20 guys and we might get one, but that one is going to be better ready for the rigors and a star.
Yeah.
Then, and I'll get more return. That's interesting.
I would do it that way, and I know I can convince guys, hey, you wouldn't want to bring your family and live in Florida or Arizona at this time of the year, and the game's over, you're home for dinner a lot of nights. I mean, the travel isn't that hard. There's a lot of reasons why I would convince big leaguers, former big leaguers, where they can develop and actually teach the game. You know, because you see guys in AAA, again, those guys, it's hard to get to some of those guys because they keep waiting on the phone call to come to the big leagues, and they're not even ready. But if I can develop guys at the lower level, grow them, teach them how to dress, teach them how to eat, teach them how to talk to people, teach them how to keep their clubhouse clean, all the things that you're going to have to be able to do when you get to the next level, I think that's important. And the best example I would use is, and you remember when Jordan Hicks came here, sight unseen, 1 year A ball, he had no idea how the big leagues work.
Right, right.
But if he'd had a manager or a coach who played in the big leagues in A ball, maybe he would have been maybe his development would have been different.
Yeah.
The Cardinals are, you could see how Isringhausen is filling in that with some of these guys, especially the way he kind of, Jason Isringhausen, Bernard Gilkey is a great guy. I mean, he just arrived and he's working. But two teams. He works for two. He is officially with one affiliate, but he does work with both Class A and then the Complex League team, which I think is great. And then what great insight he offers. And he's so enthusiastic. It's cool. It's cool to watch.
Yeah. You got to have energy. And you have to be able to.
It looks great, too.
Yeah, he's that's the other thing. These guys are in shape. They look the part. They take good care of themselves. And you got to have that sort of stuff in order for guys to buy into what you're preaching.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think we got to get back to in development. And again, I have nothing against guys who didn't play, but I think you need to have a little mixture.
Yeah.
And guys who maybe don't subscribe to an iPad as much because they trust their eyes and what they see. That's a better way. I always remember when Carlos Beltran was here, one of the most elegant athletes we've ever had in St. Louis.
No, but,
for so many different reasons. He would make those young players sit with him for three innings. He'd pick a guy, hey, we're going to watch a game together, and just sit there with him for three innings.
He was off. I remember this, and he would stay later if he didn't get to the right guy because they could all leave at the fourth inning or fifth inning back then.
And he would have guys sit and watch the game with him. And you have to have more guys who understand how to give something back to the game.
Great recall. And
I would – I can talk about him forever. You know, should be in the Hall of Fame for a lot of different reasons. But the bottom line is we need more Carlos Beltrans because they were good. They were good players.
Yeah.
So you can get a guy who was, at the end of the trail, and he can help. There's no doubt about it. But, man, if you have a good player who's willing to do this at this stage, it says a lot about his character. And those are the kind of people you want to have around.
Yeah, that's Paul Goldschmidt brought that up. He was talking about Matt Carpenter being that guy and one of the reasons why they lobbied for Matt Carpenter come back because he had great seasons with the Cardinals. They all knew his personality. He said he's going to tell somebody something a lot during the week or something that'll go in his hit column, but Matt should get credit for it. He brought that up, that that's one of the values that Carpenter specifically could bring.
Here's the thing I really hope and pray for, that Matt can still produce. It's great to have a guy around, but if you're not carrying the weight.
Well, I mean, Carlos was a star.
Yeah,
he was a starter,
But, I'm not asking Carpenter to hit 300. I'm not asking him to do – I just want him to have some very meaningful moments in the batter's box and making sure he's around guy when he sees things to be able to ask guys, what do you see in there? Because it's not always about lecture. Mm-hmm. It's about questioning. Because if you ask a guy a certain question, he may come up with the answer and solve his own problem. And I think that those are the sort of guys you're looking for to be able to quiz guys and get engaged in conversation. We spend too much time texting and looking at our phones instead of having eye-to-eye conversations. You got to have that sort of guy who understands how I can get to certain people. Because everybody's different with regard to how you communicate with them.
We talked about the lineup and about the left right-handers who are coming, who are young, the right-handers who are getting a chance to find whether or not they'll be tailored for a red jacket at some point in time. Mike, what's the upside if this works out for the Cardinals, if Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman are the future of the lineup from the right and from the left?
It says a lot. It says that look out, because they're very sound athletes. They hit for power. They do a lot of things. Walker has a chance to be a 4-plus tool guy. You know, obviously his defense he continues to work on. Gorman, if he stays healthy with the back, and we're always concerned about a back, there's no telling how many home runs he can hit. But I think he's made himself into a more complete player as well. He's just not a slug that stands in there and just tries to pound it. He can do some things in the field. But it bodes well, because we haven't had that in a long time here in St. Louis where there were homegrown guys. We go back to that 2014, you had a lot of guys from other organizations.
Yeah.
You know, that were on that team. You know, Albert and Yachty were the homegrown guys, but you think about Edmonds, you think about Roland, there were a couple of other guys that they got from different organizations, but to have those two guys as the foundation.
Renteria, Eckstein, exactly. Reggie Sanders, yeah. You go on and on and on.
And you know what, but it's interesting you bring those names up. Character guys.
Yeah.
Character guys, and I thought that was the real element. That's throwing Larry Walker. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had some real character people, and that's what this game and that's what this team needs more of. You know, it's nice to have guys who bring brownies and donuts and everything. That's fine. But it's still about going out and playing the game and playing it hard. And that's something that I think we're getting to.
One of the things that I find really interesting, and we haven't seen this much really from the Cardinals, is that they have a rookie who's coming into camp who they are treating like a starter. And there is really not a challenger to his position. What does Mason Wynn have to do in this spring to live up to what they already are showing him?
Just play. Accentuate the fundamentals. You know.
Do you like this approach for him?
Yeah, I do.
Do you give him confidence?
I think the best thing that happened to Mason Wynn was him having a taste of what the big leagues was like last year. Mm-hmm. So now he had that 6 weeks, took it home with him, processed what he needs to do to be better and be consistent, because he's proven he can hit at virtually every level.
Yeah.
His defense is going to be stellar. It's just a matter of the mindset and the approach of understanding, okay, this is what I have to do. Now, what his numbers look like? Is he a 285 guy? Is he a 250 guy? We don't know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something we're trying to figure out, because the shortstop position has changed dramatically with regard to expectation.
Yeah.
You know, there was a time, if you had to worry about your shortstop.
Thanks, Cal Ripken.
Yeah, exactly. A-Rod and some other
Derek Jeter.
Yeah. There was a time where if you had to worry about your shortstop hitting, you had bigger problems on your team.
Yeah.
But now everybody thinks, well, you know, what's the ideal number for him? And I don't know what that is, as long as he's not getting himself out.
Yeah.
If he's hitting into tough luck, I get that. But as long as he's not giving away at bats, is what I like to say. If he does that, I think he's going to be fine. And I think they got to play him every day.
You
can sink or swim with him.
I think it's fascinating.
Anything else in the cupboard that's even close to being ready?
No. Am I off on that? I mean, I think it's fascinating that they've just like, this is our starting shortstop.
I love it.
I mean, yeah.
You know,
it's different, right?
Yeah, it's different for the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Because we've seen other teams, for instance, you look at the Atlanta Braves. They roll a guy out there and he plays 160 games every year.
I mean, we all knew wink, wink, nudge, nudge, Jordan Walker was going to make the opening day if he played. But it wasn't like, you were like, here's our guy.
Exactly.
You know, here's our guy.
And I think maybe they were reserved in doing that, not putting the extra pressure on him. But bro, look around the room. I mean, this is who he is.
Mason may thrive under that. You think he could thrive with that present?
Oh, yeah.
Pressure?
Yeah, I think he will. I think he's a tough guy.
Yeah.
I think when you look at him, knowing him a little bit, knowing his background, he's a tough guy. I think he relishes the opportunity. And you know what? We need more fearless guys. You know, and I know his time with Ozzie has been. You know, you can't even sum it up, the impact that Ozzie's had on him about talking about the game. And, you know, they all had that little man complex, you know, smallest guy, better be the toughest guy. And I think he's going to be fine. And he's going to have a bump in the road. Mm-hmm. He's going to have some slumps. That comes with maturity. But the key is making sure you don't maintain the same bad habits. Understanding what it is. It's just like when I see guys go hitting the cage. Mm-hmm. They take 100 swings, but 90 of them were wrong.
Yeah.
They were for the wrong reason. So making sure the repetition is rewarding compared to just a routine. And I think he's going to be fine.
All right, we've talked about multiple different things, but I'm going to tie them together three questions here just to close out, pull all the threads together. We talked about the guys, the veterans who have great careers, who are looking for great success with the Cardinals. We talked about the young guys who the future is going to rely on. Can you be a Cardinal great without winning in the playoffs, Mike?
Whew, that's a tough one. Yes, you can, and I'll tell you why. There's eight other guys out there that have a responsibility. If they're not doing their job, why am I blaming you?
Okay.
If you do your job, if you're putting up numbers in postseason, but you, your bullpen is crappy or you have some other guys who didn't come.
If you don't get to the postseason.
I think, again, I go back to what he's able to do as an individual. Uh-huh. You know, that's why I look at the Hall of Fame. You know, it's amazing. Guys' numbers don't change when they retire, but – they always say, well, you know, maybe this is his year. Well, what's different than last year?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so I think it's still an individual performance is what we base it on. So, yeah, I think he can do it.
What's your feel for the tone and vibe so far of spring training? What's in your ear? What do you see? How would you describe what you feel so far about spring?
Well, you know, one of the things that everybody wants to turn the page on last year.
Yeah.
And I get it because, you know what, it was embarrassing. For the Cardinals as an organization and players. But with that said, I don't have a problem turning the page, but I want to make sure where the bookmark is to make sure I don't go back and repeat myself. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're going to allow that. I think bringing in these other players and guys who will remember how things went last year, from management all the way down to the equipment guys, everybody knows, hey, we can be better.
And then finally, I think it's a question I'm going to try to ask a lot of people, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it, just to start this off. What's at stake this year? What's at stake for the Cardinals? I was really struck at winter warm-up as I thought of all the things swirling around, whether it's the TV deal or it's Paul Goldschmidt in his final year of his contract. You know, both of these guys, I should say Oliver Marmol in the final year of his contract. You have all these things going on. What's at stake?
A lot. And here you didn't mention one other person, John Mozeliak, in the next to last year, his contract. Mm-hmm. If this doesn't work, do you blow it up completely with an outgoing president of baseball operations? Or do you try and find a stopgap measure to convince Paul Goldschmidt, to convince Nolan Arenado? Because they've heard that speech before.
Yeah, they have.
So, you know, how far can you go with it? I think there's more at stake this year for the Cardinals and its legacy in baseball than ever before because of all the things we've been talking about. Because, again, last year was something we'd never seen before. And they tried to fix it. And I thought they did a reasonable job as far as how they acquired players. They didn't go out and overspend because they thought they had enough legitimate components that just needed to be better. Mm-hmm. So, but I think there's a lot at stake because it's such an uneven parallel. An outgoing manager on last year of his contract, but I think with Mo's situation next to last year, you know, it's going to be critical, and I can't wait for it to start.
And that's why we have moved up Mike Claiborne Day to Memorial Day. It's a leap year. We got an extra day in February, so it's that much closer to Flag Day. So we're moving up the Mike Claiborne Day of Flag Day to you can check the standings in Memorial Day. Really? You might even be able to check the standings, honestly, in April. Well, this is a huge – there's a lot at stake this year. There's a lot at stake every month.
You know, we might be looking at Derby Day.
Yeah, Derby. Early May. All right, May Day. May Day. They better not be saying May Day on May Day.
If they say that, man, boy, it's going to be a hard, long season. But I don't think that's going to be the case.
No.
Stay healthy in camp.
Pitching's too deep.
Pitching is deeper. And just go out and play.
Yeah.
Just go out. Quit worrying about what people are saying. Just go do your job. I think we have to get back to making this simple. Work hard at keeping it simple. Yeah. If you do that, you'll be okay.
Thank you very much. That's Mike Claiborne, one of the voices of the Cardinals. You can hear him on the Cardinals Radio Network, on the call for the Cardinals, and, of course, Claib's online, always there. Mike, thank you so much for taking this time, joining me. I know I held you a little bit long, but, man, we had it going.
You know what? For you, man, I love doing this. We haven't done it in a couple of years, and I'm glad you thought enough to ask me.
Well, I think we were on the road for a flight. No, you know what? It was London this past year. It was like we were getting ready for London for Flag Day, so
right.
We missed.
You're right.
Yeah.
So it was good to have. It's always good to be with you, and keep up the great work, man. We only have a handful of credible people, in my opinion, that I can actually follow and trust because I know the work you put into this. in the dedication and your professionalism, and just we're very fortunate to have you.
Thanks, man. This is I'm not going to catch your 81, but 20. This is year 20. Wow. Can you imagine?
Well, you throw in the blues beat. How many years total?
I did three of that. So how many years at the Post Dispatch? Yeah. We're going on 25 almost.
Wow. They got to give you something over there.
A watch. No, I'm sorry. They're going to watch me. I'm sorry. I misunderstood the email. My fault.
Keep an eye on you to see if we can bring you back.
Right. Thank you so much, Mike.
All right, man.
Yeah, and as always, you can find all the Constant Cardinals coverage at stl8a.com. You can find Mike Claiborne's work with the Cardinals Radio Network and Claib's online. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch has 5 staff members at the Post-Dispatch, so you can always catch the Cardinals coverage there on the page of the Post-Dispatch and online at stl8a.com. You can find the best podcast in baseball anywhere you get your podcasts. That includes iTunes, where you can rate and review and subscribe. Subscribe makes the sponsorships possible, and sponsorships make this podcast possible. Coming to you again here, speeding towards season number 12 of the best podcast in baseball. Brought to you, as always, here by Closet by Design of St. Louis. There's a mower coming, so I better get going. Talk to you soon.